This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.
And there it is. That's as good as it gets on this stage. Nissan Townstar EV strikes again. It's an unstoppable van. Unstoppable!
Look, just fantastic. You can actually see the ProPilot technology in action. Effortless parallel parking.
It moves with all the confidence that comes with a 5-year warranty.
And with a bench full of all-star van experts, there's real strength in depth here.
That's all-star quality.
Search Nissan Townstar EV and visit your local all-star van centre to see for yourself.
Terms and conditions apply. 5 years or 100,000 miles, whichever comes first.
ProPilot is an advanced driver assist technology. Driver's responsibility to stay alert, drive safely, and control vehicle at all times.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery brings a top-tier lineup of food right to your door. No matter the result, you'll always be winning with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app and you'll get rewards points delivered too, so that ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants. 18 plus rewards registration required. Points only on menu items, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
This might not go to plan. As has probably been mentioned in many Plymouth Argyle group chats over the last few days. Good evening. Well, actually, let's abolish the good evening. And welcome to another episode of the Green and White podcast brought to you by Argyle Life. Unfortunately, I cannot be the one to bring good news as we could prepare to draw the curtain on another football season. The Greens travelled to the capital. London was calling as Argyle headed to the Den to take on the ferocious Lions with their ringmaster Neil Harris in the home dugout. And unfortunately, it was not to be for Argyle. A pretty timid performance by all accounts, then leading to an 85th minute winner for Millwall to send Argyle to a crushing defeat, leaving everything all very perilous with just one game to go. Now, I'm going to start with a confession, Your Grace. I wasn't at the game yesterday. I was at Sandown Park enjoying a very nice hospitality day at the end of the jump season. And full disclosure here, I have not seen anything of Millwall versus Plymouth Argyle. So we've assembled a motley crew who are going to give me an in-depth, fantastic analysis of just where it all went wrong at the Den. We're going to go anti-clockwise here and we're going to take a trip into the call centre. Adam, can you hear me?
Hello, yes, I can. You've been put through. Evening. It's, I'm going to struggle to say anything here to lighten the mood, but hey, it's good to be with you.
Gazza, we're here. Don't worry. And so is Ben. How are you, mate?
I'm slightly envious of you that, you know, you've had a nice day at the races and not seen any of Argyle versus Millwall, to be honest. I think that was by far the best weekend spent out of the four of us here. Other than that, I'm looking forward to exercising the ghosts of this last game and looking forward to the last day of the season with trepidation.
Yes, I did not see any of Millwall Plymouth Argyle. I did, however, manage to see a lot of London and its transport network at a very early hour of this morning. But I don't really want to go over that ground too much. And last but not least, Mr. Allsop, it's been a while since we were on a podcast together.
Has it? Leicester, yeah. Maybe? I can't remember.
I wasn't on Leicester. Aaron dropped me. Do you remember?
Oh, right. They'll blur into one at some point. Good to be on with you. Oh, that's right, because I was going to apologise for dropping beer over your trousers, which is a thing that I did. So I'll say sorry for that now. before the Leicester game, not even the excuse of it being after the Leicester game. All good. Thank you.
Excellent. David Knight asks, did any of them go? John, you did. Talk us through it.
Yeah. Well, you know, I thought obviously a lot of young talent swarmed over every blade of grass of the pitch. And that was just the full-time pitch invasion. No, it was a really frustrating game. I'm probably not as negative on it as some. I don't think we were great. I'm certainly not going to claim that. But equally, I don't think we were terrible either. I think it was pretty much a nothing game. There wasn't really a lot in it for 90 minutes. We sort of had a spell in the second half where we didn't create much in the way of opportunities, which has obviously been a big problem for us in recent weeks. But, you know, Whittaker kind of nearly got through on goal and was tackled really, really well by one of their defenders. But, we had a few corners in a row. Gibson sort of put a header over the bar from one of those and sort of looked like maybe we were going to try and get on the front foot and press for what would have been, you know, obviously an all-important winner in the last 10 minutes. And instead, they've not really created a ton either all afternoon, although they did have, you know, the better chances of the two teams. Mike Cooper's made some good saves. They put a ball into the back stick. Cooper, their Cooper, not ours, has out-jumped Pleguezuelo, who had just been brought on for Ashley Phillips, a substitution that I'm sure we'll probably get into a bit later on. Won't do a Sam and preempt the host's questions. But, and obviously it's kind of in real time, kind of just agonizingly looped over the keeper. You can see kind of every... I don't know, it was kind of a bated breath moment in the away end, right, as the ball just looped really high into the air and you suddenly realise our Cooper is not going to get a touch on it and it kind of plops into the bottom corner. And I predicted last weekend that we'd lose 1-0, but I certainly thought this might be how the game would go. Obviously, we know that they're a really, well-organised side who have been on a good run of form under Neil Harris and obviously got their own safety as a result of that, clinched that last week. So I think everything I said after the Stoke game about this being an unfortunate fixture for us, in terms of bouncing straight back proved to be true. You know, I think we could have done with a game that was going to be a lot more open, a lot more expansive, give us a lot more kind of space in key areas. And instead we had to go to a team that play, you know, one of the kind of tightest styles of football in the league. That being said, and without wishing to disrespect them too much, you really could see they didn't have anything left to play for. I don't think it was the most high intensity performance from them, not impugning their professionalism, but obviously, you know, once you've achieved your objective for the season and then you're kind of metaphorically on the beach, I think it's just hard to get up for, you know, going into 50-50 challenges. There wasn't really much snap about their play. They were neat and tidy, again, well organized, but it's frustrating because I feel like if we had, you know, pushed forward just a little bit more and shown just a little bit more bravery, we could have nicked it. But I'm not gonna sit here and say that we were terrible and totally outclassed. It was a very, very marginal game that ultimately has been decided by one marginal moment. Will it cost us? I guess we'll come on to that later.
Yeah, I just want to bring up a comment. David is very vigilant in the comments. He tells us it was Rotherham was the last time that me and John were together on a pod.
I don't think I was on that one, was I? Ugh, who knows?
Oh.
Anyway, sorry to impugn your memory, David.
I'm sure that there was a pod in recent weeks where we have been together. Obviously, as you can tell, this is a pretty haphazard attempt by me to host the podcast this evening. So please do get your comments and questions in. We are going to come to them a little bit later on. We've got all the full-time thoughts and there are many Twitter questions to get through tonight. Adam, why don't you elaborate on what John said? John says it was nothing game and it was one moment that ultimately sealed it. Do you agree? Is there anything you want to add?
Yeah, I certainly tend to. I mean, there was very little in it and we've lost it at the more or less the very end through that one moment. I think the main word is disappointed because we've gone ultimately to a team who you could tell had nothing to play for. We knew they had nothing to play for. We knew they weren't the most technical and we've gone and said, right, let's set up for a point. And we've not got one. And it's frustrating more than anything to know that we can, that we could have set up in even a slightly more attacking manner. Maybe just having three centre-backs rather than the four, you know, could have done something. It's just frustrating. And I know it's, yeah, and that comment on screen is absolutely right. My day went downhill right after I had the breakfast with the senior greens, which is always terrific. But it was really bizarre if anything, because we have heard from many, many people that you know, attacking football at this time, at this club, is non-negotiable, and we're always going to try and put ourselves on the front foot, particularly when you know there's so much on the line. And ultimately, if Ian Foster's Plymouth Argyle put in a performance like that, I imagine his head would be on a spike and paraded through the barbican. So it's not terrific to know that we're still very much capable of putting in that sort of performance against, I'll stress it again, a team that had absolutely nothing to play for. I think ultimately that's what's annoyed me the most, because we've lost the game. You could absolutely argue that a point may have been fair. Well, we're unfortunate to lose the game, and possibly in the manner it happened. But at the same time, with results going the way, although had we scored the goal rather than conceded it, we would now be sitting here celebrating safe. That's how pivotal that game was. And that, to go into that and never really show indication that we're actually trying to win it, it's irked me. Possibly more than it should, considering considering everything that we've been through. But it's left me, I know, frustrated more than anything. Disappointed was the word I used. Annoyed is another. Yeah, I'm still. Look, I've had a day to digest it. I've had a coach trip back again, lovely, from the senior greens, to digest it, and I'm still struggling to put it into words because it was just so insipid. It was so tense in the way that it really didn't necessarily need to be if we got ourselves on the front foot, and ultimately, you know, the way it happened was a big disappointment in its own right, and then I preempt that we'll come on to that one as well. But yeah, it's going to take a few days. I'll obviously be up for it next week, and I think we all will, but right now I'm just really deflated, and as I said, disappointed with how that's gone, and it was really strange, and those are the best words I can find at the moment.
And without wishing to be a bit of a green-tinted spectacles wearer about all of this, I obviously had the benefit of watching through FOTMob yesterday with notifications coming through. There weren't many. And keeping an eye on results elsewhere and the ever-changing table, it's obviously pretty clear from what everyone said, and not just the two guys here, but all over social media, the forums and things, that we set up for a point. And in the end, a point wouldn't have been a terrible result yesterday. And should we have gone with a little bit more of an attacking mentality? Or is it just a case of the pressure slightly getting to the group?
I think it's one of those decisions that you live or die by the results. If we've kept the clean sheet and got the point, we'd be certainly looking a lot more healthy now. And even if, you know, especially if we've gone and got the win, it didn't work. You know, we ended up losing. So it looks silly. And more than that, I think, although we have struggled to score of late, especially since Azaz went, and especially since JB's been injured, we've sort of lacked a lot of dynamism from midfield. We've probably been worse at defending than we have been at scoring. I don't know if maybe the clean sheet against Leicester maybe went to the coaching staff's head and thinking that we could hold out another clean sheet. But we've conceded an awful lot of goals this season, all throughout the season. So the idea of going to a team that's won three on the bounce, yes, they were newly safe, and so they weren't pounding around with the same sort of enthusiasm they would have been previously, but they also were playing with a bit of freedom and a bit of joy, happy to just have a kick around with no pressure. So, you know, you could see that, as has been said, they weren't necessarily snapping into everything. They weren't necessarily, you know, they're a physical team and they weren't necessarily putting themselves about, but at the same time they were happy to sort of ping balls in, which, you know, rather than sort of, you know, the more expansive free-flowing sort of stuff that you don't necessarily associate with Millwall, they were smacking the ball in and cheers memes. And that was, you know, ultimately our undoing. They're not necessarily a big crossing of the ball team per se, but they obviously highlighted, we could see they were getting results that way. And so it proved that one came off, and it was just a shame that it was when it was. I think that highlighted the substitution, which I think really needed to be made because Phillips was struggling. Could he have played on a bit longer? I don't know. You know, it might have happened. The goal might have come after that. But I think it's the... you know, we're not good at keeping clean sheets. So why go there and set up to try and keep a clean sheet? Why change the personnel so much? Why completely adopt a different set of style of game plan? If it had worked, great. You'd say masterstroke. We all would, wouldn't we? We'd all say if it got the win, if we got the 1-0 win, we'd all been sat here saying great masterstroke, putting Edwards in the midfield, acting like an auxiliary centre back, yada yada yada. You know, great tactics. It all came off, and the opposite has happened. So we're saying the opposite. I don't necessarily think it was an awful decision, but I think once it was clear it wasn't working, there should have been changes sooner. And that's where I think the culpability lies. You know, it's all well and good setting that system up and going for it, but I think it was evident that a slightly disinterested Millwall team were still dominating possession and chances. There should have been changes sooner to try and either just completely block up or to put more attacking threat on the pitch. And neither of those things happened. It seemed a bit samey. We didn't make a change to what, the 70th minute or gone. I think that's where the culpability lies. Not necessarily in the initial game plan, but I think in the lack of response to how the game was playing out. I think that's where, I think we miss Schumacher's sort of in-game responses a bit. You know, we feel the turgidity of the torpor of the sort of game plan going on because we were so used to that sort of dynamism from Schumacher maybe. But I think it was clear that things needed to change. And, you know, everyone in the crowd was, you could see the away crowd was restless. Twitter was restless, but still nothing happened. And I think that's where the questions need to be asked. You know, it's all well and good going with a game plan, but if it doesn't work, you need a plan B. And that's what I feel like we were lacking.
Just to quickly push back a little bit. I don't necessarily disagree. I certainly don't disagree with everything you said, and I certainly agree with the stuff about not changing the game sooner. But I don't think we did set up to go and play for a draw. I think we set up to go and win the game. But I think it was a strategy that was reliant on us coming out the right side of one or two moments that kind of took as a given that the game would be very tight and could go one goal either way, right? So like, you know, I take the point definitely that is perhaps not the best approach that gets the best out of our players. I certainly take the point that if Ian Foster had set up like that, then there'd be a load of criticism and rightly so. We certainly didn't go there and set about them in the first 20 minutes and try and go 2 or 3 nil up and sort of kill the game off, in the cradle, as it were. But I really think the game plan is very clearly to keep it tight and then try and nick it late on. And I think we'll get onto the Pleggy forgive Phillips substitution, which turned out to be a mistake. But I think that the sort of impetus behind that was to bring on someone who could be a little bit more mobile and perhaps better on the ball going forward out of the centre back positions. Not to say that I don't think Phillips is very good at those things at all. I think he actually had a pretty good game yesterday. But I think that change, when it was eventually made, you know, was kind of minded to do that. I think bringing on Hardy for Wayne was also kind of done with that in mind, you know, sort of give Wayne an hour or so and then bring Hardy on to kind of stretch the tired defence rather than watching him get tired first, which I think we've seen all too often in recent weeks. So I think there was a game plan there to go and win it. And I guess to play devil's advocate, while it obviously hasn't worked in hindsight, you could also say that, you know, now in five games under the caretaker managers, we've conceded five goals and scored three, right? I think overall. And that return has got us 7 points. So obviously that's been a return that has been totally sort of dependent on keeping it tight at the back and then scoring one goal in a game. Now, again, I'm very open to the conversation about that not being the right way to approach things for our squad. But equally, you know, I think it's hard to... I don't think it's just like saying, you know, the Leicester game happened, so let's try and kind of change. Let's try and replicate that every single week. I mean, QPR also happened, and Rotherham also happened, and that was kind of much the same story. So I kind of understand why they would go about it that way. And I think, especially after last weekend, if we'd gone there, gone really gung-ho, and it hadn't worked, and we'd been broken on twice, and they'd scored twice in the first 10, 15 minutes, obviously everyone would be saying, well, that was a total disaster, and the game was lost after 10 minutes. So... yeah, I'm certainly not going to, you know, sit here and praise to the rafters the way that we managed the game, because it could in many respects have been a lot better. And obviously in hindsight, it didn't work. But I don't think the idea was to go there and play for a draw. I think it was to win the game. I think that was fairly clear from the way that the sort of pattern of the game unfolded. But yes, obviously it was reliant on us coming out the right side of a very marginal scoreline, and we didn't do that.
Adam, talk us through the changes to the starting lineup that Juznip and Nanskerville made for this one. Three changes in all from the Stoke game.
Yeah, and I think it's just to perhaps to expand on what John said there. You know, I completely accept that every team goes into a game with an idea of winning it, or at least they should, or they're in the wrong sport. What these changes did, and the reason there's a lot of playing for a point, is, well, a couple of things. One, because it was pretty clear that going defensively would be the way we wanted to tackle the game, the way we put a Battler and Edwards in midfield, which didn't necessarily mind. The fact that we had the four centre-backs with Galloway playing a left wing-back, it was clear that the idea of us trying to win this game was to hold out, to try and nick a moment, and if we get a point, it's not necessarily the worst thing in the world. And I've seen a few comments on that saying that a point overall wouldn't have made a difference. I actually totally disagree. I think a point would have been absolutely fine from yesterday for a couple of reasons. One, because it would give us so many more options going into Hull. We would be in a situation with an extra point where drawing against Hull would be virtually certain to keep us safe had we drawn against Millwall. One, because it would require Blackburn to go and get something at Leicester. And two, because even if that did happen, Birmingham would have to score at least five goals against Norwich. So I don't necessarily think saying we're going to go here and a point wouldn't be the worst thing in the world is a bad thing, because, you know, it's absolutely would have been fine. Now, those changes were made, or the changes and the players that came in on the back of that. I mean, you're looking at a few things. As I say, Edwards in midfield isn't necessarily one I hated as such. It was a bit left field, but I think
Adam, I think it was enforced, right? That was what Nanskerville was suggesting in his post-match interview. Houghton was ill and Forshaw was
available. Yeah, I mean, do you know what? I hadn't even seen that, but I guess it makes a lot of sense. I mean, regardless, even if it was by choice, I wouldn't have hated it anyway, for the simple reason that having a Battler and having someone that can get themselves involved in duels in a midfield against Millwall is probably a decent enough way to go about it. I mean, I tend to agree that Darko Jamie was a big miss in that sense, because even though he didn't win every duel he participated in, he would always put himself in the mix, get himself to into those situations, and ultimately could have given us maybe one or two more moments had he been available. But that, I didn't necessarily mind either way, enforced or not. Then there's the question of Ben Wayne coming in up front for Hardy. Now, I think this is a kind of one of those damned if you do, damned if you don't moments, because if that was the other way around and Hardy played 60 minutes and Wayne played 30 or however long it was, probably a bit longer than that, and exactly the same thing happened, which it may well have done. We know Hardy's been running on fumes. Then there'll be a conversation of, oh, why didn't you start Ben Wayne? Why didn't you know give us a chance to get Hardy off the bench, perhaps? Whereas now what we're looking at is saying, oh, well, couldn't we have started Hardy because Wayne didn't necessarily perform? I don't think Wayne had his worst game, for what it's worth, but putting him in a situation where he's facing Jake Cooper and Japhet Tanganga for balls played up to him is, it's asking for trouble, I think. So, the changes, I think the changes, when I saw them come in, as much as the first thing that we thought of was, well, it's a little bit weird, it was a little bit, I don't know, uninspiring. Maybe is how I describe it, and I think that kind of goes back to the point that we've all spoken about. You know, there was no indication from that selection that we were going to try and outscore them or anything like that. You know, it wasn't a case of, oh, we've picked this team because we want to get three goals. We don't necessarily care if you scored two. You know, Plymouth Argyle haven't been like that for a while. But to see it so explicitly, to see it in such a situation where you can absolutely tell that we're more than happy to spend our time soaking up pressure and hope to nick one on the break. I keep harking back to the same point, but we're against a team with nothing to play for. Could there not have at least been something for us to hang our hat on in that team selection to go, oh, okay, well, we're trying to exploit them this way, or we're trying to do this, we're trying to play this part of the game on our terms because we know we're fighting for it and they're not. I know this is something, hindsight's 2020, and if Ben Wayne smashes it into the top corner on 20 minutes rather than smashing it into the stand, perhaps we're having a very different conversation. But yeah, it's just another one of those parts of the day as a whole that it left me uninspired and did not really fill me with much confidence, even though we know we believe that at least some of those changes were enforced anyway. It was all a bit of a damp squib in the end for such an occasion, and I don't think those changes helped.
John, talk us through the goal that ultimately decided it, because there's been a lot of, to coin a Sam Down phrase, there's been a lot of hyperbole on social media about the substitution to take off Ashley Phillips and bring on Julio Pleguezuelo. Talk me through the goal.
Yeah, I mean, I sort of mentioned it earlier. It's kind of a looping cross in from the right-hand side. And then a very loopy header that's kind of, again, in real time, it was sort of agonizing to watch it go in. Obviously, the hyperbole, Sam would call it, that you're referring to is about bringing off Phillips and putting on Pleguezuelo. You know, very clearly, Jake Cooper, I assume the tallest man on the pitch for them, must be close, if not, you know, had a much better chance, let's say, of out-jumping Pleguezuelo than he did about jumping Ashley Phillips, who is a lot taller. It's obviously not to say that goal wouldn't have been scored if Phillips had been on the pitch, but it would have given us a lot better chance of, didn't even need to jump. So, you know, I think Cooper would have been capable of beating Phillips in an aerial duel, but Pleguezuelo, it was a big mismatch, wasn't it? And obviously, maybe there's an extent to which you can blame him. Obviously, you can't really blame him for his genes and the fact he's not taller. Which was a key part of it. And then Cooper's positioning, I've seen some criticism of that. I don't know. I'm not sure he was going to save it, necessarily one way or another. Mike Cooper, that is. So, yeah, it's a really soft and frustrating goal to concede from an avenue that we had done quite well at shutting down for you know, the rest of the game. And, you know, an avenue that we presumably always knew they were going to be dangerous at. And while I do agree with Adam's comments about the lineup being a little bit uninspiring, I think that some of the selections, particularly sort of shifting Galloway out to left wing back, did quite well at kind of nullifying that wide ball in the box threat. I think he's a very capable player who can play left wing back very well, but also, you know, kind of did have the dimension of also kind of, yeah, it was kind of like we had four centre backs on the pitch, right? And I think that sort of worked quite well throughout the afternoon. But then, yeah, it's just one moment where either it's a lapse in concentration or it's just an aerial advantage that they happen to have. Poor positioning, you could possibly argue, from one or both of Pleguezuelo and Cooper. And ultimately, it's been decisive. And yeah, a very disappointing goal to concede.
I think with that goal, yeah, I've seen some... Oh, sorry. Yeah, I've seen some comments that was like, is it poor management? Is it poor decision-making? Not necessarily with the substitute in itself, because I think we'd all kind of seen Phillips going off and thinking, yeah, I can see why he's done this. Phillips is tiring. He's not having the best of times out there. So the substitution wasn't necessarily unsensible. The problem I have with the goal is that from minute one, for every set piece, be that a free kick, corner, even long throws, we knew the big centre-backs would go up, that's standard. What Millwall did from their first set piece is, as soon as the ball was cleared, would keep at least one of Cooper or of Tanganga up in the penalty area. Now, we would have seen that happening. We would have known that's happening. And even if we ended up in some sort of, let's call it, open play situation, we'd have known that's a threat that we had to combat, right? So is the fact that we've ended up with Pleguezuelo rather than, say, Dan Scar being on the man that's been left up there, is that an error of judgment? Is the fact that the game was coming to end and they were tiring just meant that was a slight lapse? I'm not sure what happened, but I was really disappointed that something that Millwall had clearly put forward as a tactic that we'd seen from minute one and that we'd been able to deal with more or less, like you say, John, very well for the vast majority of the game, that we lapsed in that sort of way. I don't know what it was, whether it was tactical to say, well, Pleggy, he's your man, or whether it was a case of we really ought to have had a bit more concentration at the back and saying, no, we want Dan Scar to be on him at all times, even if he's staying upfield from what is an open play situation. I don't know the correct answer to that, but I was really disappointed with how that went in. And I think, like, as has been said, as the ball was looping up, there was a certain deflation and inevitability that it was going to settle in the bottom corner. So, yeah, a bad moment and one that I think was foreseeable and I think was preventable, if I'm honest, one way or another. But I don't necessarily think the substitution itself was the reason that went in, nor do I think we should be scolding Pleggy exactly for being 5'10". Admittedly, he could have jumped because Cooper didn't need to. But hey, that's another conversation.
And there it is. That's as good as it gets on this stage. Nissan Townstar EV strikes again. It's an unstoppable van. Unstoppable!
Look, just fantastic. You can actually see the ProPilot technology in action. Effortless parallel parking.
It moves with all the confidence that comes with a 5-year warranty.
And with a bench full of all-star van experts, there's real strength in depth here.
That's all-star quality.
Search Nissan Townstar EV and visit your local all-star van centre to see for yourself.
Terms and conditions apply. 5 years or 100,000 miles, whichever comes first.
ProPilot is an advanced driver assist technology. Driver's responsibility to stay alert, drive safely, and control vehicle at all times.
Picture the scene. All of your mates around, you've got your McNugget share boxes ready to go. Partner this with your team playing champagne football. Perfect. Order McDelivery now on the McDonald's app. There's nothing quite like a McDelivery. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Let's rattle through some full-time thoughts then before we come on to the questions tonight. Matt Lee says, I don't honestly believe there are three worse teams than us in the league. Rotherham, Huddersfield and us are teams I've seen turn in the worst performances of the season. Also, you know, you just know a Stansfield winner sends us down next week. It's fate. We've got Ryan says, actually thought we played okay. We went with physicality and it worked. Just needed to be better going forward. Felt we needed four short on. Hardy made a huge difference. Could have gone either way. Birmingham, don't beat Norwich. We stay up even if we lose, unless we concede four and they draw. Let's not think about that. Mike Charlick takes a different view on it. Smiles on faces. We've got our Argyle back. Do me a favour. If the dressing room ousts the manager, then they better step up. Sadly, they just aren't good enough. We've got Paul Burke. Lineup, performance, subs, timing of subs, hiring of head coach, January recruitment, timing of the sacking of the head coach, hiring of a firefighting manager, all honking, and we will probably go down because of this. I'm going back to bed. Wake me up for Burton away in August. Vince Rennie says, only way we stay up is if Norwich beat Birmingham. We have gone back to Fozzie ball and we were dreadful again. I can see us getting hammered next week. And let's try and pick out one more. Michael Sultan says, it looked like the game plan was going to pay off. Then we take off Phillips at 6'4" with 9 minutes of normal time left. Bring on Pleggy, 5'10". Result was immediately outjumped for the goal. Was this substitution essential? We have already obviously touched on that. Just very quickly, is there anything else anyone wants to add on Hull before we go into the questions? This will be a rare opportunity probably for Andy Davis to get off scot-free from a berating of Ref Watch, given I haven't watched the game, so I can't possibly comment, but I'm sure he had a shocker. Anybody got anything to add on Millwall?
Just on the referee quickly, I didn't notice him at all, so I'd say probably job well done in that sense. Fairly unobtrusive performance, I thought.
I would like to say quickly that, you know, Adam was
just very quickly, Ben. I've just had a shudder go down my spine. Sorry, carry on.
So walking over your grave or whatever they say.
No, it was somebody praising a referee on a green and white podcast. It just doesn't sit right with me.
Yeah, no, it was. I thought he was pretty good as well, to be fair. But then there wasn't really much. I think it was okay from Millwall to there not be much bite, but I thought we lacked bite, considering that we, you know, are in the position we are in. That's the one thing I think that there was a sort of harrying around from Joe Edwards and stuff. But other than that, I thought we lacked bite. I think maybe it would have been, you know, even if picked up a few more yellows would have sat a bit nicer with the result at the end of the day. And I just want to say that, like, with the changes and everything.
Very, very quickly, what's that Roy Keane meme? You know, if I'm not having a great day, you know, I'll look around and I'll just smash into somebody just to make me feel better. You know,
yeah, exactly. I think it would have made the rest of us feel a bit better too. I think it's exposed, like, we've had, you know, Forshaw's chronically injured, JB's out for the season, Devine was he's back now available, but he was suspended, wasn't he? Just shows how thin the squad is. I think there was a comment from Rosa earlier. It has, you know, Schumacher, if you extrapolate the points that Schumacher had accrued over the season, I think we'd have been on target for 54 points, which isn't miles off where we are now. And we had Azaz and Kundal, KKH, who I think is a massively underrated, who added to the team, I think, more than is credited for. We've now got a weaker squad than then. So we're probably performing about realistically where we ought to be. And we just don't have the depth of squad. You know, we've let people go, like Matt Butcher, even players like Tyreek Wright, who, you know, might have been able to come in and give Morgan Whittaker sort of like 10, 20 minutes of break or whatever. I just feel like there's been a little bit of mismanagement of some of the players we've allowed to go, maybe, or haven't brought in bodies that might have. Yeah, it's all well, and like someone mentioned in the comments earlier that, you know, Ash Phillips hasn't played a full 90 minutes for since I think his first game, perhaps. So I do feel like the January window could be, not that, you know, we were to know it was going to go as badly as it was. No one was brought in, you know, thinking it was going to go. They weren't going to perform or they were going to get injured. But we certainly, I think, took a risk with some of the signings in January. And I think that might contribute quite heavily towards our downfall, because we were a thin squad to begin with. And to allow players to go out, you know, I know Early got injured, but he could have stayed and been a body. We let Butcher go. I think there might, it's all, as Adam said, 2020 hindsight's great, but I think one of the biggest contributors to our performance yesterday and also sort of late has been a general accrual of tiredness and you know, just weight in the legs from players who are having to go again and again and again in a league, remember, that most of them haven't ever played in, requiring levels that they've not ever had to dig to before. So yeah, I think the selection yesterday kind of speaks a bit to that, as much as to, you know, any kind of being too clever in team selection, just to the fact that we're just so thin.
Yeah, I wish I was so thin as our squad. Let's go into questions then, given we've got nothing else to touch on our Millwall, and we've actually managed to get through 35 minutes with somebody. We've got 600 people watching tonight, so thank you very much. Please continue to like, comment, subscribe, retweet, share, bookmark. I don't know what else social media accounts get you to do these days, but please do get involved. And we've managed to get through 35 minutes without anyone appearing in the comments and going, "Mill," which is quite an achievement.
You just froze there for a second, Joe. Say that again.
I can't blame the Wi-Fi on that one.
As I said to Sam down on the train yesterday, what's your favourite implement for storing pepper in at home?
I'm not doing it again.
Anyone else?
Who's
your favourite right back from England's 2002 World Cup squad? That's a different question. And
you're going to get permanently muted in a minute.
Who's your favourite utilitarian philosopher if you're not allowed to say Jeremy Bentham? Do it again and I'll stop.
We don't need to. There you go, Rory's got involved. I'm going to ask the first question. I'm going to ask it of all three of you, really. And this isn't meant as a dig at you, Adam, but it was something that I mentioned to John and Ben in particular pre-Leicester, when we had a gathering, when John decided that my jeans weren't wet enough for the rest of the evening with the rain that had fallen earlier in the day. I mentioned that to expect against QPR and Rotherham after such a quick turnaround for Argyle to go back to the free-flowing attacking football just like that was always going to be a bit tricky. And I mentioned that perhaps after Leicester, when we had a clean week going into Stoke, then a clean week going into Millwall, that perhaps then we would see the fruits of that labour and we would perhaps be able to go back to something like what we were exploiting over Christmas. That really hasn't happened, Adam, is it? And if anything, the last two performances, we've gone backwards big time.
I totally agree. And it's, as I said at the very start, this is something that is probably, and certainly the last performance at Millwall, indistinguishable from Fozzyball, which is worrying in its own right. Now, I think it's one of those, to kind of link back actually to what Ben was saying, it that all links back to the January window, and we don't have the squad, certainly at this point, to go back to playing exactly how we were or how we want to be. Ultimately replacing Finisterre with Alfie Devine is looking like a worse decision week on week. So it's, an unfortunate one. Now, I don't think that necessarily means we have to go completely into our shell. I think I've been vocal enough on the way that the way I feel about how we set up, particularly for the last game. But but based on what's happened, particularly with the squad that we have available, and the fact that we've had some enforced changes, the fact that we've had to put out some lineups that don't necessarily, or don't at all, I shouldn't say necessarily, suit the way that we would all like to see us play. It's gone backwards. There's absolutely no doubt about that. I don't necessarily think, that Leicester performance itself was obviously actually in a very similar vein. We set up to defend them and get ourselves a golden break, and that time it worked. And you know, take nothing away, doing that against a team that will probably be crowned champions in the next week or so is superb, but exactly how a team that's playing like that should look to perform. But to then go ahead and kind of take a backward step against two teams that are at our end of the table, and particularly again Millwall, who had nothing to play for, doesn't sit right. And I think I know we're going to go on to it, so I won't say too much as to next weekend just yet. I think there's perhaps a saving grace in the sense that, you know, being at home, it's a very different occasion. We know this side has preferred being at home than away this season. Tuesday for Nanskerville, unbeaten at home at present. I know that's one win and three draws, but it's unbeaten, and that could be significant. So perhaps
we take
made
a draw.
Difference.
So
we'll see. It's one of those where perhaps the fact that we've been on our travels for the last two has contributed to what you say, Joe, the fact that the Blues' performances have gone backwards. And I kind of hope it has, because it would be a better omen for the weekend. But it's, regardless, I think I would all say it's not been very pleasant to see.
I think anything as well, happens? Yeah, just quickly, that under Schumacher, the press started with Ryan Hardy. And I think even under Foster, that game against Cardiff, when he was sort of unplayable, that everything started with Hardy. He's not been well, has he? We've all commented on it. And when you haven't got him running the channels and doing the things that he does, creating the tempo for the rest of the team, there's not really much else to happen. You know, Morgan Whittaker keeps dropping deep to try and pick up the ball, but then he's not where he needs to be for the 1-2 to sort of go. It just seems to be so much, so much impetus is lost when Hardy's not at 100%. And that's why I thought Wayne's performance was really not very good. I'm not going to go in on him now, but it kind of had to be played. You know, they needed, you know, if with John, what was it, John or Adam? Someone made the point, surely it's better to get 30 minutes out of him against a tired defence than him tire himself out for 60 minutes against a fresh defence. But that there were other alternatives perhaps than that. But I feel like without Hardy, we're just not as dynamic. We just don't get that attacking. We're not quick enough. I don't use the word dynamic again, but that it's the right word. You know, we don't transition as quickly as we need to get in behind teams, to get the best out of players like Whittaker, who will cut inside or be able to get to the line. You know, when the defence is backing in place, it's so much harder for him to get through the line. And you know, that's our problem. We haven't got anyone else to replace Hardy who does the same job or does a similar job to a decent level. Without that sort of that trigger, our attacking football's kind of lost. You know, people can't just, as good as Morgan Whittaker is, and you know, I think Bundu had a good game yesterday for the large part. As good as, you know, some of these players are, that it's a new level for them, isn't it? You know, people talk about Callum Wright and other players, and yes, they've had good games. You know, all of these players have had good games, but they're not going to do it consistently against championship defences week in, week out until they've sort of established themselves at this level. So without that kind of systemic, you know, dynamism, without the sort of it working for the team as a unit, players aren't just going to be able to conjure up individual bits of brilliance all the time. And that's really a shame, because you'd think that with the amount of rest that Hardy would have had, he'd been able to get back. So clearly it must be more than just general tiredness. It must be some kind of lingering, niggling injury or something that's just preventing him going at full pace, because I think that's really where we're losing out. I think that's sort of like the key, that, you know, or the cornerstone, or the, what do they call it? The keystone at the top of the arch, where if you take it out, everything falls down. I feel like he's that for the way we attack, really. And it has been all season. And the fact that we're now performing this way, I think really is, a lot of it is on that.
Do you want anything to add? John? Come in, John. Or is it me gone?
No, I tell you what, I was expecting someone to be gone in this, and I didn't think it would be John.
It was me. Hello, I'm back. I think I'm back. But then I was just saying I think I'm back, and then I wasn't again. So maybe I am back now.
Anything, John, anything to add before we lose you again?
Nope.
Excellent. Right, moving on. I have a load of comments to go through. Carl, I notice your latest comment. I have seen your question, and it will be put to the panel very shortly. But I'm going to go to the social media questions first. Earlier on today, we gauged an opinion poll. No, we were not asking you whether or not you're going to be Tory or Labour in a few months' time. This is a much more exciting opinion poll. This is gauging your opinion as to whether Plymouth Argyle will be a championship club next season or not. So far, there is still 21 hours left to vote in this poll. We have had 260 votes. And I can reveal we have had 130 say we will stay up, and we will have 130 that have said we will go down. That helps nobody.
It's so, like
on to the questions. On to the questions. Zach Brown asked, biggest question for Ben is, how do Argyle put a football into a net?
Well, since it was addressed to me, I suppose I should answer it personally. No, that's kind of what I just alluded to. Rather, just a second ago, I think it's going to be a case of, well, let's look at Bundu's goal against Leicester. We didn't really threaten much in that game. It was poor defending and a really excellent finish threaded between two defenders, and it kissed in off the post. So, yeah, we should coordinate that at some point. For those who are listening on audio, you should go and check out 46 minutes in the comment that came up on the screen. Yeah, I think that we've been relying on individual brilliance to a certain point, because it's not what, you know, the system doesn't seem to be working. You know, against Millwall, it was quite clear we were trying to do certain things and it just wasn't happening. You know, we're trying to get the ball out to Wayne. We were trying to put the balls in the channels. We're trying to play 1-2s around the midfield. Nothing seems to be working. So I feel like we've literally just got to try and limp over the line and hope that, you know, We can try what we want on holiday. We're not, you know, if we haven't been able to do it in the past 2 weeks, I don't see us putting into play some new wizardry to sort of suddenly bypass Hull's pretty decent defence. I know they shipped three against Ipswich, but it is a pretty mean defence overall, and has improved as the season's gone on. And they'll be on, you know, they'll have a point to prove. Even if their chances are slim, they'll be going hell for leather. So I think there's no point really worrying about how we put the ball in the net for this last game of the season. We've got to try and hope for a bit of magic from someone and hope that Norwich can do us a favour, which, you know, I know we can't rely on that, but I think that's what it's going to come down to, unfortunately. And then if we're talking about next season, it will all depend on what division we're in, what money's available, and who stays, who maybe agitates for a move, or et cetera, et cetera. So I think that's really going to be a question for next season. I don't think there's any solution, any easily identifiable solutions or implementable solutions that we can sort of get done within a week. I mean, everyone has their favourites amongst the squad who might come in. Callum Wright, Freddie Osaka, I know there's been lots of calls for, and I wouldn't be against seeing one of those play. But then again, like the lineup that was selected for this past game, you live and die by those decisions. If you play Freddie Osaka and he gets skinned inside out, and you know someone gets in down the right, their right, and scores from that, and that's the fourth goal that sends us down or something, they're like, why are you playing Osaka? Why not play whatever? So, you know, I don't think there's any clever trickery to be found to all of a sudden make us an attacking outfit again, sadly, for this last game.
Without trying to coin a phrase from Neil Warnock on that famous 2003 for Sheffield United documentary when he stood in the change room, I don't care if it comes off knob end in 90th minute. Just remember that for next week. Doesn't matter how it comes about. Let's go through some of the other questions.
Darren's going to be playing, is he?
To be fair, a lot of the Twitter questions that came in, we have already touched on. Do continue to get the comments and the questions in tonight to the live stream. Obviously, YouTube is the better place to go to, because while you're there, you can subscribe to the Argyle Live YouTube channel, and it will also give you a bigger box for your comment to appear in. And whilst I'm plugging many, many things to do with Argyle Live to the right-hand side of your screen, argyle.live/shop for much, much Argyle paraphernalia as being sported by Adam and Ben. John has let the side down with his rather tame blue hoodie.
I wore my Adam Randall jumper so much in the week that it had to go in the wash. True story.
Well, there we go. Let's go into the YouTube questions that we've got, because there is one Twitter question that I'll come on to later. We've got some more comments coming in, just trying to see if there's anything worth showing. Right, who have we got? Let's go straight to Carl Barnard's question. Oh, no, we'll come back to that later, because that will be in the Hull preview. We've got Mark Watson. It's not really a comment, but it's something I wanted to keep to one side. Thoughts of staying up for me. This sounds really bad, but think would rather go down than be at Rotherham next season.
Absolutely disagree on that, because we'll pocket so much money from staying up that it would... I'd quite happily go down next season if we just haven't been able to rebuild, because we need a massive overhaul, but much rather stay up and take that new Sky money, please and thank you.
Simon Wilkinson says, all I'll say is I'm happy only three teams get relegated, not four. Is it goodnight Vienna? We'll touch on the goodnight Vienna a little bit later on. David Knight asks, has anyone got a spare ticket for Hull? David, I think your best bet for that is to look at the Argyle Ticketing Exchange on the club website. Mark Watson said, looking forward to the retain list more. I hate to tell you, Mark, but we do only have three players out of contract. So for once, this retain list could actually be quite boring, unless we're exercising contract extensions in players' contracts, or whether anyone's triggered a extra clause. Marcus said, whatever happens, it's going to be a really busy summer. It is going to be a really busy summer. And before we touch on Argyle's busy summer, we will be doing that in a series of very special episodes throughout the off season, starting literally 72 hours after the Hull game. We will have more on that next week. Aaron is going to plug it. If he's watching, he is going to plug it. We will be back with a very special live episode after the Hull game. So keep an eye out for that. Toby Gosling asked, is it quite concerning the last 2 weeks have gone back to Fosball? We touched on that a little bit earlier with Adam. Steve Riggs says, five goals in the last 11 matches. Who's going to score the goals to keep us up? Well, I think we've touched on it, that we really need...
Ashley Barnes.
We've always been a fan of Barnesy on the podcast, so do it for the boys, for king and country.
Josh Sargent, if you're listening, Josh Sargent, I promise to never compare you to Rod and or Todd Flanders again in my group chats. If you can just do us a favor next weekend, please. I can't promise that no one else on the internet will do that, but I personally will swear for at least 3 months not to compare you to Rod or Todd Flanders if you can get the goals against Birmingham.
I think we first need to be begging David Wagner not to rest him.
Unfortunately, Carl, one of the live episodes is not a great big Argyle Life musical chairs with Sam down. Steve Watts, it's not really a question, but I thought I'd show it anyway. He's gone all out. He says Blackburn, Huddersfield and Rotherham will be the three to go. That would be quite the drop for Blackburn, but it's not inconceivable. Don't forget, they do have Leicester City to play on the final day. We've already touched on Luke Hodges' question. Why is Pleggy marking their biggest aerial threat anyway? Surely Scar marks him. Was it poor management? I think we sort of agree that perhaps it wasn't poor management. It was just a fait accompli, essentially, that unfortunately was just a recipe for disaster. So let's go on to Steve Vaughan's question's interesting, John. Did Argo have a contingency plan when Shuey left?
Well, they said they did, didn't they? Hallett came out, if I remember correctly, around that time and said, you know, this is obviously something that was fairly foreseeable given our success, that, you know, some club would potentially want to come and poach our manager. And so, you know, we've identified a list of targets to that end. And I have no reason to doubt that that is true. Obviously, the identities of the names on that list are going to depend on when the thing happens, right? Like, it's all, you know, you could all very well and good have a couple of names who would be very much in your favored, let's get that person in as a manager contingency plan. But, you know, if those people aren't available when the actual day comes when you have to exercise that plan, then you can't get them in. It's that simple. My view of the Foster appointment is not that it was this kind of panicked kind of, you know, pluck something out of thin air and hope it sticks. Oh, goodness, Shuey has left. What are we going to do now thing? I think it was following the template that has brought us success. Now, obviously, we've discussed this to death. I don't necessarily want to relitigate this, but I think very clearly, rightly or wrongly, that their thought process was last time we hired internally, this time we can't do that because all of the staff are going with Shuey to Stoke. In fact, you know, it's possible. I don't know. I have literally no idea about this, but it's possible that Mark Hughes was a name on there. On their, you know, contingency plan list, and perhaps it wasn't, you know, so certain that he would definitely leave if Shuey were to walk out. Obviously, we all know that when Ryan Lowe went to Preston, he tried to take Shuey with him, and Shuey said no and stayed put. So, I think with Foster, I've always said I think it was in their opinion or from their viewpoint, the closest they were going to get to an internal hire. You know, given that we couldn't actually make one of those, right? It was someone who Jusnip knew. It was someone who, you know, Jusnip had a prior football relationship with. He was sort of a coach who hadn't managed professionally, sort of in the same mold as Shuey, but someone who they felt was exciting. And for all the reasons that, again, we've litigated over and over again on this podcast and in our group chats and in the pub, it didn't work. But I really think that the thought process that went into that Foster hire was quite clear. At least it seems clear to me. I don't think it was a kind of guess. I think the contingency plan was to do something like that. And to be honest, it, you know, all other factors aside, 48 points at this stage of the season is probably what we were looking at to stay up. I'm pretty sure I've heard people around the club say that they felt it would be, what, 46, 47 earlier in the season. We're actually above that. And obviously it's turned out to be not an insane number of points needed to stay up in the end, but a slightly more competitive relegation picture than I think we would all have envisioned back in December, January kind of time when Shuey left and we were looking for a replacement, right? I mean, I think I definitely said to people at the time, you know, Foster probably has a bit of time to bed in here. We probably don't need to do quite as well in the second half of the season as we did in the first, because at that point, QPR and Sheffield Wednesday, you know, both, I guess, were showing signs of life under new managers, but neither looked like they kind of cracked the code. I think, in fact, that both of those clubs, after having a new manager bounce, had kind of regressed a little bit into sort of middling form, which at that point wasn't going to be enough to keep them up. Turns out they both massively hit the jackpot by hiring outstanding young managers who no one in this country really knew anything about. And we very much did not do that. So I think this was the plan. I think for me, the question mark should be over whether it was a naive plan to execute halfway through a season in such an unforgiving league, as opposed to was there a contingency plan at all? And obviously that's a conversation we've had many times, and I'm sure we'll continue to have over the summer regardless of what happens next. But I guess a bigger question for me now is, you know, what's the contingency plan now going forward? Because it seems to me that it seems far less likely to me. I'm glad someone else is temporary residential curtains are coming in for hate, by the way. So thanks, Gazza, for that. It's been my Airbnb. I still get reminded about
Gaz, in all fairness, there's nothing I can do about this particular hotel chain's curtains at such a late hour. So I can't even get their Wi-Fi to work properly, so let alone change the curtains.
Just to quickly finish the point, I think for me it's probably less likely there's a contingency plan in place now, because I assume that when Foster came in, the thinking wasn't he will be sacked within a few months. I think the thinking will have very much been probably even if we go down from here, he deserves time. You know, he deserves the summer to rebuild. And I think either that thinking changed, or there wasn't really a fear that we would go down in any real sense, or, you know, Foster just proved to be such a bad fit that a change was necessitated sooner because his position became untenable. So for me now, I think I'm going to be interested to see going forward, depending on what league we're in, who we get in, and whether the Foster process has kind of convinced them they need to deviate from the, you know, from the way they've been doing things up to now, whether they are going to be willing again to put their faith in a kind of untested but potentially exciting but potentially catastrophic Foster Shuey type appointment, or whether they're going to think, you know, that didn't work out last time, we need something a bit different. And I think that's a conversation we're going to be having a lot in the next few weeks, so I'm not going to get into that now in too much detail, but for me, I think that is probably the more pressing question than was there a contingency plan post Shuey.
Might be a conversation that we have as the aforementioned special episode 72 hours after the Hull game. More on that next week. Couple of things coming in. Johnny Q asked, can anyone remember the last time a player was on loan at two clubs in the same season and they both got relegated? If only we had Sam down here. John Christopher Benson says, who is the third player out of contract? Thought it was only Galloway and Miller. You're forgetting Callum Burton, of course, is the third player whose deal expires in the summer. Stokey AJ obviously has nothing else to do with his Sunday night but watch a Plymouth Argyle live stream. So thanks for the support, Stokey. Don't forget to subscribe, like, and comment on all of our pieces. We do enjoy the interaction with opposition fans. I do hope I can bookmark this comment for when we beat Stoke in September next year in the Championship. I just want, Adam, I'll give this one to you because I'm wary of the time, and some of us have got a busy couple of days coming up. Just a very quick, just a quick answer to this one, really. It's a little bit off topic. Do you think Saxon Ali could come back and make an impact next season? I think he could do a job. Obviously, it's gutting that he went away and couldn't get game time at Wickham, but it's a big pre-season for the lad, isn't it? Given he's going to have yet another manager to try and impress.
Yeah, and I think it's the age-old question actually with all players who have been out long-term is how exactly they come back and whether they're able to push on. Because I think the double whammy with Ali is not only has he spent the best part or more or less the entirety of a season out injured, he's also lost some significant years in his early development. You know, he's still, I believe, only 21, so to lose a year at that age could be really significant. Alternatively, he could pick up and it could be absolutely fine. He's played 90 minutes this season, and those were 90 good minutes away at Watford. So if he's able to reach those sorts of levels... Aaron's putting me off. He's not even here. How does he do it? If he's able to reach those levels, again, no matter what division we're in, then he's still got a lot of time to push forward. But I wouldn't necessarily want to say that he's definitely going to do that for the simple reason that you can never tell how well a player is going to come back from such a series of serious injuries. So we live in hope. I liked what I saw from him this season, but ultimately what I saw from him this season was 90 minutes. So there's going to be a lot to prove, and I hope he can.
Yeah, fingers crossed that he gets a good pre-season. It sounds pretty positive that he's already back running on the grass, I think Nance or Juznik mentioned a week ago. So fingers crossed that he can go on and have a good pre-season. Obviously, you can see Aaron's in the comments. He can't be bothered to join us this evening or even co-produce the programme. He's too busy enjoying a weekend at a very famous resort, shall we say, in the east of England. No, the south of England, sorry. the south of England. So hopefully, all I'm going to say, please drink responsibly. Actually, I can't say that, can I, after my escapades last night? But please do try and drink responsibly. Josh says this is on Hallett's head. With him in charge, we will never push forward. I would argue that we did push forward to win the league with 101 points just 12 months ago tomorrow. That brilliant day against Burton.
Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like playing at home. The same goes for McDonald's. Maximize your home ground advantage with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18 plus serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
And there it is. That's as good as it gets on this stage. Nissan Townstar EV strikes again. It's an unstoppable van. Unstoppable!
Look, just fantastic. You can actually see the ProPilot technology in action. Effortless parallel parking.
It moves with all the confidence that comes with a 5-year warranty.
And with a bench full of all-star van experts, there's real strength in depth here.
That's all-star quality.
Search Nissan Townstar EV and visit your local all-star van centre to see for yourself.
Terms and conditions apply. 5 years or 100,000 miles, whichever comes first.
ProPilot is an advanced driver assist technology. Driver's responsibility to stay alert, drive safely, and control vehicle at all times.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network.
TalkSport. Powered by fans.